Hello and welcome to the Journal of Democracy podcast. I'm Brent Kalmer, managing editor of the journal, and I'm joined today by Jürgen Moeller and Sven-Erik Skaaning, who are authors of The Third Wave, Inside the Numbers, from the October 2013 issue of the Journal of Democracy. And I should note that this appears as a free download at journalofdemocracy.org, so the piece that we'll be speaking about today you can also read on your own. Now, a brief word about our authors today. Jürgen Moeller and Sven-Erik Skaaning are associate professors of political science at Aarhus University in Denmark, and their most recent book is Democracy and Democratization in Comparative Perspective. They also had an essay called Regime Types and Democratic Sequencing, which appeared in the January 2013 issue of the Journal of Democracy, of which this new piece is a bit of a continuation, you might say. So first off, thank you for joining us, you two.
Well, it's our pleasure.
And let's start right in here with the substance of your piece. And I'm just going to read you a brief quote, and then maybe you can kind of expand upon it. In the piece, you write that, quote, according to Freedom House's annual Freedom in the World survey, the last 7 years, which are 2006 to 2012, were notable for democratic setbacks rather than democratic gains. This seven-year slump has breathed new life into two closely intertwined debates about the, quote, third wave of democratization. So perhaps you could describe these two debates and expand a bit on them.
Certainly. So just to recap the notion of a third wave of democratization, the idea is that since its second advent after 1800, democracy has spread in three waves. And the most recent of these is one that Samuel P. Huntington, in a famous book from 1991, dated to the early 1970s. So this is the so-called third wave of democratization, which we disaggregate in our article, basically in two ways. We do it by showing development across different regime types, which is something I think we'll come back to. And then we do it by going down to the regional level to show how developments in different regions differ from each other, that differences and similarities between regions. But the point about that quote is that the recent setback that has been registered since about 2006, the fact that there has been some democratic setbacks in the most recent years, it has reinvigorated two debates about this third wave. And the first debate is whether a reverse wave is looming or threatening. This was something that Huntington actually also touched up on in his 1991 book, where he basically prophesied that such a reverse wave was beckoning. But in the mid-1990s, a number of other researchers touched up on this idea and argued that this was a likely scenario. Then that debate was somewhat ignored for a couple of years, but this new setback has then rekindled it. And the arguments that have been made here is that a number of factors are presently conducive to such a setback or rollback, namely factors such as the financial crisis, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the flourishing of China, and also a kind of general dissatisfaction with regime performance in new democracies. So that's the first of the two debates. The second one then concerns the spread of a gray zone between democracy and autocracy. And here the point that scholars have raised is that political openings during the third wave, and especially after the breakdown of communism, have tended to produce not genuine democracies, but more hybrid regimes. So regimes that are characterized by some mix of autocratic and democratic features. And most importantly, scholars have argued that these hybrid regimes or gray zone regimes are not just stopovers on the path to, for instance, liberal democracy, but are stable regimes which are likely to endure. So regimes such as liberal democracy, for instance, as Tariq Zakaria spoke about is something that's likely to become a mainstay of these third wave development.
And this is something that you approach by using a typology really that you introduced in the January 2013 issue. You kind of classify democracies in different ways with increasingly demanding definitions of democracy. And I'll just briefly mention these four types, and then perhaps you could explain them a bit more. So the four types you identify, and these are four types of democracy, are minimalist democracy, electoral democracy, polyarchy, and liberal democracy. So perhaps you could just give us a brief synopsis of what distinguishes these.
Sure. With regard to minimalist democracy, this regime type only requires that political competition for political leadership takes place via regular elections with uncertain outcomes. So basically, these regimes have to fulfill three criteria. Elections must be contested, the winners take office and rule, and the elections have to be repeated once in a while. And it's really important for us to emphasize that minimalist democracies are different from what we call electoral autocracies. First and foremost, with regard to whether the opposition is able to win victories or not in principle. But moving on to the next step in our hierarchical order of democratic regime types, we have the electoral democracy, which requires higher levels of electoral integrity. This means there will be no room for irregularities, such as problems with the voter registration and other stuff. The regime type polyarchy then adds to these features full respect for freedom of speech and freedom of association, the classical liberal political liberties. Then on the top of our hierarchy, we have the most demanding definition of democracy, which we include, which is also adding equality before and under the law as a criterion.
And this is an interesting way of going about addressing these kind of two intertwined debates that we spoke of before, because now you're talking about kind of imposing this hierarchy on the developments that we've seen in the third wave, or since the third wave began. And one of the things that you mentioned that's quite interesting is that there are some interesting trends, such as the deepening of democracy in many regimes from the 1990s onward in particular. Which countries have become deeper democracies throughout that time?
Yeah, I think what is critical for us to emphasize with our typology is that instead of saying that there's one correct definition, we want to use the different understandings to get a more nuanced picture of the political regime developments. And this these distinctions enable us actually to point out the countries that have experienced more democratic deepening than just entering the set of democracies. So what we find is that in no less than 3 out of 5 regions, we have seen a quite substantial deepening of democracy. This has mostly taken place in Latin America, Eastern Europe, and in Asia, but not really in the sub-Saharan Africa and in the MENA region. In Latin America, we have seen countries like Chile, Argentina, and Uruguay and Brazil moving from being among the autocratic countries to actually become quite deep democracies, that is, polyarchies or liberal democracies. In Asia, we have seen the same experience in countries such as South Korea and Taiwan and many of the Pacific islands. And among the former communist countries in Eastern Europe, the deepening of democracy has first and foremost taken place in the new EU membership countries. Actually, in this region, the geographic distribution of the regime types is very striking, where we see the easternmost parts of this region, we have still see autocracies. In the westernmost parts, we see quite deep democracies in the form of polyarchies and liberal democracies. And in the middle, we see a lot of gray zone regimes.
And this is a point that you make, especially in the piece, is the need to distinguish between kind of the global trends that you're looking at and then drill down to the regional trends, which you just spoke about. What is the importance of making that distinction?
I think the importance here is that we see that the dynamics are different in different regions. So whereas we in the Eastern Europe and in Sub-Saharan Africa see very abrupt changes from situations with characterized by only having autocracies in the region to getting a more different, very many kinds of regime types, we see a more gradual development going on in Southeast Asia and in Latin America.
Of course, if I can just add to that, the very notion about these two debates and the fact that a reverse wave might be threatening or that there might, to a larger or smaller extent, be a gray zone is something that's quite interesting to investigate on the regional level. Because, of course, the case might be that democracy is more under pressure in some regions than in others, or is flourishing more in some regions than in others. And likewise, the case might be that these gray zone regimes, in our typology instances of minimalist democracy and multi-party autocracy, is more common in some regions than in others. And this is, of course, something we can only appraise if we look, or as you say, drill down to the regional level.
Mm-hmm. And this also seems to have some interesting implications for what is known as the debate on democratic sequencing. In the earlier article, in Regime Types and Democratic Sequencing, you say that, quote, the debate has focused on the sequencing of state building, liberal constitutionalism, and mass participation in elections. The most common point of departure is the observation that the original sequence leading to democracy in Western Europe and its settler colonies, which are Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and the United States, was one in which state building and the rise of liberal constitutionalism preceded large-scale electoral democratization. Now, could that same sequence be followed today?
Yeah. This sequencing debate, it has basically been fought out over two issues. The first descriptive question is which attributes have tended to come first in democratization processes. And the second question that has been posed is then which attributes should come first to facilitate democratic deepening most. Whereas the first question is basically descriptive, the second one is prescriptive or normative. Here the important point to make is that that while there is a lot of agreement that the Western development was one where state building and constitutionalism preceded democracy, we can also very quickly make the point that this Western development was based on a very unique combination of explanatory conditions, which are unlikely to have been present elsewhere. And for this reason, when other countries have embarked on these political openings during the third wave, they've done so from a vastly different point of departure. One where they do not have a long-lasting legacy of constitutionalism and representative institutions. So that's the first observation we can make, that the Western pathway differs in that it is based on some very idiosyncratic premises. Secondly, we can observe that especially in the decades following the breakdown of communism, democracy has really triumphed in an ideological sense. There has developed what has been termed a democratic zeitgeist, or the notion that democratic rule is really the only legitimate form of rule. And in this context, so if you combine these two observations, then we make the argument in our article that today it's almost inconceivable that one could have another sequence than the one which starts with competitive elections. People are simply not willing to wait for democracy. It's one argument. And another one is that autocrats who are not held accountable really have very poor incentives to create such things as the rule of law or effective state institutions. And one reflection of this is, and this is something we show in the first of our two pieces, is that what has been termed the autocratic pathway to liberal democracy, so the pathway which privileges the rule of law over electoral rights, is virtually not present today. That is, it has virtually not been present during the third wave, which we investigate.
Well, on that note, we should thank you for joining us. My guests today have been Jürgen Møller and Svend Erik Skønning of Aarhus University in Denmark. They are authors of The Third Wave Inside the Numbers, which appears in the October 2013 issue of the Journal of Democracy. And this appears as a free download on our site. You can go and read exactly what Professors Møller and Skønning have to say on the matter. And we appreciate you joining us, professors. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure.